Welcome to Ag Matters, covering the positive agriculture stories from across Alaska with your host, Amy Pettit of the Alaska Farmland Trust.
Good morning and welcome to another edition of Ag Matters Radio. I'm your host, Amy Pettit, and joining me in the studio this morning is a Brazilian, Felipe. Remind me of your last name. Leite. Oh, okay. That's easy. Yeah. Like latte. Leite. Okay, good. We're going to chat all about your adventure, your book, why you're here, what you're doing, etc. I just want to point out that this was one of those random social media connections. The reason that I encourage people to be on social media because things like this happen. I heard a brief portion of your story on National Public Radio about this trip that you're taking. And I reached out to you through social media and you answered. And now here you are in Palmer and we're going to talk about what you're doing, right?
For sure. You know, yeah. I think social media can be used for evil and it can be used for good, right? Yeah. You know, a lot of times it separates us from our loved ones, but it has this amazing ability to connect people from faraway places. I was in Sao Paulo on my ranch when you messaged me from Alaska, and now we're together. It's so cool.
Yeah, super cool. Well, welcome again. I like to always start my show by asking my guests to tell me your connection to agriculture. And in this case, why are you in Alaska?
All right. So my name is Felipe because it means a friend or lover of horses. And before I could walk with my own 2 feet, I was on top of a quarter horse with my old man. My dad rode bulls, bronc, roped, and he was my first hero. And ever since I was a young kid, all I wanted to do was be a cowboy.
Okay.
And I've ridden more than 23,000 kilometers today from the Calgary Stampede Rodeo to Ushuaia, Argentina, known as the end of the world. And I've been blessed to, you know, brand cattle in southern Canada and the U.S. and hang out with the gauchos of South America and cut hay in many places. And that's my connection to ag. And I'm here right now beginning the last leg of my journey, which will take me from Fairbanks, Alaska to the Calgary Stampede, where it all began a decade ago. And I'll finish off the Americas from north to south.
Very, very cool. A decade. You've been doing this. This ride has taken you that long.
Yeah, it will take nearly a decade by the time I arrive at the Calgary Stampede. 8 years. I left July 2012, a kid, scared out of my boots.
Yeah.
Had a tennis ball in my throat when I saddled up those horses with the RCMP officers. They accompanied me out of the Centennial Calgary Stampede.
Okay.
I had no idea where I was going to sleep that night or how I was going to manage to get to Montana, never mind cross Mexico and befriend the cartels and, you know, get to Brazil. But yeah, it's been a wild ride and I'm excited to go back to that beautiful rodeo.
Yeah, well, super, super cool. So it's May 6th-ish today that we're recording. Not sure when this is going to air, but you're going to start your adventure, you said, from Fairbanks. And tell us more about that. Where in Fairbanks and how long do you think it's going to take you to get from Fairbanks over to Calgary?
Yeah, so we are going to leave the horses at a place called Chelsea's Pet Resort.
Okay.
So that's where everyone's going to meet up. I'm hoping to leave around 1 p.m. I would like to invite everyone from Alaska. This final journey of mine is to celebrate farmers, ranchers, cowboys, the horse, this Western way of life, because I've traveled so far and I only travel 30 kilometers a day.
Okay.
And every day, you know, a different farmer or rancher will open the doors for myself and my animals.
Sure.
And they treat me with so much love and respect. And I was able to see the sense of community, the hard work, the responsibility. They're stewards of the land. You know, no one takes care of the land like these ranchers and farmers. And then I'm also, as a journalist, I'm able to see the other side of it, how marginalized these men and women are today in our society. You know, you get these folks from big cities telling us that, you know, the problem with the world is ranching.
Right.
And it's like, are you kidding me? How much garbage do you generate? How much garbage did you generate in the past hour?
Sure.
So the idea is to celebrate, you know, that way of life. And, you know, I fear sometimes that I won't be able to put my son on a horse because, you know, humans are turning into machines and they don't understand what a horse is anymore and they don't understand what it's like to have that beautiful connection with an animal and with nature. So the idea is to celebrate our Western way of life. So I'm inviting people in all the communities, all the states, all the provinces I ride through to come out to join me and to celebrate the horse and this way of life that we cherish.
I love it. I love it. So what day are you leaving Fairbanks?
May 17th. We start this journey. And yeah, 1 p.m., whoever wants to join us, it would be a pleasure. And then for all the other communities I cross, it'd be great to have you guys with me on this ride.
Yeah, very cool. I connected with you on social media. Let's tell people how they can find you on those platforms.
All right. So on Instagram, it's at Felipe Massetti, F-I-L-I-P-E-M-A-S-E-T-T-I, Felipe Massetti. Facebook, you can search up Journey America. And online, the website is called outwildtv.com.
Okay.
Outwildtv.com. And you'll find weekly blogs, videos. You can read on the last journeys I took. Both journeys are on there, a bunch of blogs, lots of videos. And eventually it will become a reality series.
Oh, very cool. Okay. Yeah. So I completely respect and kind of connect with your, you know, learning to ride a horse before you walked and always wanting to be a cowboy. I kind of grew up in the same way. But that didn't end me up riding a horse from one tip of the Americas to the other. So what kind of led you to this? I mean, it's lifestyle or job or what would you call this? Why are you doing it?
Yeah, you know, it was a dream. It was a lifelong dream that I turned into my job in order to live it. I believe life is really short. You know, you only get one chance. The more I travel, the more I see that at the blink of the eye, it can all go away. So I'm going to enjoy every single day that I have here. I don't know who put me here or for what reason. And I just follow my instincts. And it was like destiny, you know, led me down this path. Like I said, my dad had me on a horse before I could walk, gave me my name because it means a friend of horses. I went to Canada when I was 9 years old. When I was a child, my dad used to read a book to me every night, tell me the story of Aim Chifley, who traveled on horseback from Buenos Aires to New York in 1925.
Okay.
And that book just left a huge mark in my person. I remember being a child, you know, still in Brazil, riding my pony around the ranch and, you know, just imagining what it would be like to travel through all these nations with the same horses and pretending like I was Aim Chifley, you know, facing off against the Indians or arriving in Central America or, you know, having to swim rivers with crocodiles. And I just loved the book so much. And as I grew up, it became my Bible. I read it a bunch of times. And when I ended up in Canada, started roping in the rodeos, ended up studying journalism in Toronto. Love telling stories, like I think all good cowboys. And my last year of journalism was something really strong. You know, it was like, you know what? Either I do this now or I do nothing. Every cell in my body was telling me to ride home. I didn't have anything. So it took me 2 years to acquire everything I needed, from the equipment, the horses, the money, the knowledge. Spoke to long riders around the globe. For what I do, strategic planning is life or death.
Sure.
Extremely important for everyone. I do a lot of talks, and I always tell people, you know, if you want something in life, just plan it. You know, it's not, luck doesn't exist.
Sure.
But if you plan it, it will come. So yeah, I spent a long time planning, getting everything, and when I was ready, I started riding south.
Okay. Man, there's just like a million questions rolling through my head. First and foremost, I feel like when I first read about your story, looked online, is there a cause behind some of this? Are you raising money for a purpose besides just, you know, supporting yourself along the way?
Yes, ma'am. So I raise money for a children's cancer hospital in Brazil. It's called the Barretos Children's Cancer Hospital. And the thing about Brazil, which I'm sure a lot of people know, you know, it's a developing country. And we have a lot of problems when it comes to health, you know, hospitals that we have people dying in hospital lines due to a lack of basic resources, doctors, equipment, yada, yada, yada. So this hospital is free.
Oh, okay.
It offers a free treatment for people all over Brazil. And it's run through donations. So they need to raise 17 million reais a month. And it's all through, you know, someone will have a horse sale and donate the money to the hospital.
Okay.
Someone will have a cattle sale, donate the money to the hospital.
Sure.
Someone will go on a long ride like me on horseback and raise money for the hospital. And it was started by a rancher, which is really cool. A cowboy. He used to bulldog and tie down rope. And his dad started the hospital. And after a few years, sent his son to close it because he had lost the family's money in the hospital trying to help people. And when Henrique Prata, this cowboy, went to close the hospital, he's very Catholic, and he went into the chapel. They had a chapel in the hospital, and he saw a vision of Our Lady of Nossa Senhora da Aparecida, which is a Brazilian saint, version of Mother Mary.
Okay.
And he understood that as, I can't close this.
Okay.
And it became his life's work. Today he has 7 hospitals in Brazil. From the 1 it turned to 7. And you go in there and you could be a 6 kids hospital in Toronto, you could be in a hospital in Sweden or the USA. It's a state-of-the-art hospital. And I went to do a talk there and it changed my life. And okay. I said, you know what? Everything I do from now on will be to help this hospital, anything I can do. So I raise money for them.
That's incredible. Well, thank you for that effort and the work that you do. That was one of the reasons, I guess, when I read about you and connected with you. There's not all stories are worth telling, but I thought this would be a great story to tell on Ag Matters. So I appreciate that you're doing that. Quick reminder to folks that this is Ag Matters Radio. I'm your host, Amy Pettit, and joining me in the studio this morning is Felipe from Brazil, starting your long ride or kind of ending your long ride, right? This is the last chapter.
This is like the celebratory stretch, right? So
yeah.
I got to face grizzly bears, bison,
yeah,
extremely cold conditions, the Yukon. So yeah, it would just be a big celebration.
Yeah, no kidding. So being a horse person myself, I have to ask about the horses. So you've already done the biggest part of the trip is over.
Yes.
Is it the same horses that went on that journey? Are they with you or coming to Alaska to make this last journey?
No. So I rode 2 quarter horses and a Mustang, Frenchie, Bruiser, and Dude. My kids from Calgary to Brazil. I retired them at my family's ranch. And for the second trip, the second leg from Brazil to Ushuaia, I did each country with its own horse because
okay.
crossing borders is becoming...
Oh, sure. Health issues. And
exactly.
Yeah.
It's becoming impossible. I actually think I'm one of the last long riders to travel such a long distance with the same animals from my experience. And on this last trip, I will use 2 wild horses from the Penticton Indian Band in southern British Columbia, as a way to, you know, promote these horses. There's a lot of them down there, and they're all going for slaughter, unfortunately.
Okay.
And these are beautiful, amazing animals that could make a kid really happy, you know.
Okay.
So my idea is to also promote the wild horses, the Mustang, and get more people to adopt them.
Okay. So how much time have you spent with them before you start the journey? Like,
I spent 2 weeks with them.
2 weeks?
Yeah, in which I had to break one of the horses.
Yeah.
He was wild. He's 7 years old. We had to castrate him,
oh,
and I had to break
word.
Him. And it was interesting. Interesting 2 weeks, but we got it under our belt. He's good to go now. And the second horse is green, but broke to ride.
Okay.
So their names is Mac, Big Mac, 17 hands.
Oh, my goodness.
It's like you're riding an elephant.
Yeah.
And Smokey is the second one, a beautiful gray horse. He looks like a quarter horse, not
okay.
too big. And yeah, they're going to be my 2 partners in crime out there, my kids, my herd, my family.
Yeah.
And hopefully we'll be able to live out this dream and get to Calgary July of 2020.
Okay, so that was one of the questions that I was going to circle back around to. You're starting May 17th, 2019, but you don't anticipate getting to Calgary for over a year.
Yeah, 30 yep. kilometers a day, 4 kilometers an hour, a lot of rest for the animals. You have to have patience to do
sure.
this. But it's the most beautiful part of the journey. You know, you see things that normal folks don't see when you're on a horse. You're more elevated. Obviously, on Big Mac, I'm really elevated.
Really elevated.
You have no engine, so no sound around you, so you're able to listen to the birds and the wind and, you know, hear nature. And you 4 kilometers an hour, you know, you see every pebble on the road. You
yeah.
sleep in places that, you know, no one's ever slept. And you meet a lot of people because
sure.
you need help every single day. So it's awesome.
Yeah. And in that era of train of thought, do you always know where you're going to stop, and have you planned that ahead? You've connected with people and you have a support team in advance, or you just, you know, end up where you end up?
You end up where you end up.
Okay.
You literally, you know, ride 30 kilometers. If there's a house,
you knock on the door.
Knock on the door, tell your story and say, can I please stay here with 2 horses? I know I haven't showered in 10 days, but I'm a nice kid. And well, on this journey, thankfully, I met a girlfriend in my last journey in
okay.
Patagonia. And Claire is here with me, a really nice family from Claire's home, Alberta, lent a motorhome for us.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, everything's changed. I now get to sleep in a bed, shower.
Oh, and, you're cheating.
Oh, I'm
no, I'm
cheating.
Just kidding.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm cheating all the way. Yeah, and so it's going to be awesome. We get, you know, after I did the first trip, it became evident to me that the amount of suffering that it took, you know, it was 2 years and 3 months, and it was like going to war, you know. Some days we didn't have water. We saw 2 people shot dead, witnessed a man trying to kill his wife, had to befriend drug lords. You know, met grizzly bears, climbed mountains, swam rivers. It was very dangerous. And I realized that I wanted my horses to have the simple things like water and food, which I didn't have on that first journey. And it takes a toll on your mind. When I finished the first trip,
That's a lot of stress.
I had symptoms of PTSD, you know, 6 months after. And, you know, I wanted to become a pro at this. I wanted to be a professional. And now I feel like the first one was an adventure. The second one was a little less of an adventure, but still. And now it's an expedition, you know. We have a little corral for the horses every night. Have panels. I'll have food for them. I'll have water. I'll have a bed and a shower for me. So, yeah, I think I deserve it after everything I've done.
Yeah, very cool.
And especially my boys, yeah.
Yeah. And so are you ponying the second horse all the time? Or is that second horse in a trailer behind the RV?
No trailer, just the motorhome. Yeah, he'll be pony walking, and some days if the motorhome can't come through, if you take a trail, I'll take the pack saddle and spend 3-4 days by myself. If the motorhome's there, I'll just pony bareback and switch.
Yeah.
So, you know, they at least they rest their back, because the walking is very natural for a horse. In the wild, they walk 30-40 kilometers looking for forage and water. But the saddle, you know, it can be a strain on their back. So having the two horses is great.
Yeah, very good. Many Alaskans have driven the Alcan before. Everyone should do it at least once. And once you've done it once, sometimes you either want to do it again or you never want to do it again. But will you be traveling the Alcan?
Yes,
the Alaska
part.
Canada Highway.
I just drove it up here.
Okay.
We left on a Monday, got here on a Friday, and it's so funny because I had a talk to do at the university here.
Okay.
And we arrived 3 minutes before the talk. I didn't know we were going to set our clocks back an hour once we arrived in Alaska, right?
Oh.
But I was so happy that happened. Otherwise, I wouldn't have made it. Literally just God, you know. But yeah, I drove it. And I don't know if I enjoyed it or not, because I've never seen the route that I had to travel prior.
Oh, sure.
So now I've seen everything. Like, I saw 16
It'll look different
bears
going the other way.
On
It'll
the
look
side
different.
Of the road in northern BC, you know. I saw those bison that I have to cross.
Yeah.
You know, I saw the mountain passes and the lack of space. So yeah, it was interesting. I feel like it's like a video game. It's like unlock bison mode.
Yeah.
Unlock grizzly bear mode.
Right.
So it's going to be funny.
It is a wild road. And I think you see things that you won't see anywhere else. I mean, you've probably experienced that before. But the Alcan is unique, certainly for when you're driving it. I can think of things that I saw the first time driving it when just blew your mind. And I did it once in my college girlfriend and I did it in 42 hours from Soldotna, Alaska to Pendleton, Oregon. We were racing to get to the Pendleton Roundup before it started.
Oh, yes.
Not
I
to participate,
to
but just to watch.
Yeah.
But yeah, we did it in 42 hours. I think the longest we stopped was 4 hours in Banff. But I didn't sleep the whole time because that was the first time I'd done the trip. And you can't close your eyes. There's so much to see.
So
at least going 4 miles or 4 kilometers an hour, you get to see everything.
You see everything. Yeah, you don't miss anything.
Right.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. But yeah, driving it already was so stunning. Like, oh, my God. I've seen a lot of things, but that's the beauty of the world we live in, that everywhere has its own beauty. And it's so distinct. Like, you know, you're never going to see anywhere in the world, like Patagonia, for instance.
Sure.
And this road is the same thing, you know what I mean? Like, you're never going to see these mountains, the way that the trees are, because it's so boggy and so wet. Like, it was very interesting, and I'd never seen anything like that.
Yeah, for sure. I think we all feel that way, especially when we come to Alaska. It's something we've never seen before, and it feels special to be a part of this place. Another quick reminder to folks, Ag Matters Radio, I'm your host, Amy Pettit, and joining me in the studio this morning is Felipe on does the journey have a title? Like, does it have a name? Or
Journey America.
Yeah. And you're in stage 3,
the final chapter.
Let's remind folks one more time where they can go to track you and follow you, because I've got no doubt that people are going to want to follow you along. They're going to want to support this journey, and they're going to want to watch the photos, etc. So social media, etc. Again.
Yeah, sure. So on Facebook, you can just put in Journey America. It's a page on there. On Instagram, at Felipe Massetti. Felipe is FiLipeMassetti, Felipe Massetti. And the website is outwildtv.com. I also have a book out.
Yeah.
I'm gonna plug it.
Tell
I'm,
us
I'm
about the book.
I'm the worst salesman in the world.
that's why I'm here.
Yeah, that's why I hear it. So I have a book out. It was 13 weeks as a bestseller in Brazil. It became a bestseller on Amazon. Number one bestseller. It's called Long Ride Home, Guts, Guns, and Grizzlies. And that tells the first portion of the journey, the 16,000 kilometers from Canada to Brazil.
Okay.
It's going to become a major motion picture that will begin shooting at the Calgary Stampede in 2020, which is going to be really exciting. And I just finished writing my second book, which hopefully I'll release at the Calgary Stampede when I arrive as well in 2020.
Okay. Is that more about the journey?
That's about the second journey from Brazil to Ushuaia.
Okay, very good. So Guts, Guns, and Grizzlies, and I read about this a little bit. This is leading us to some of the things that you've experienced on the trip. So we don't have time for all the stories, but what's the scariest thing you've experienced on the ride thus far?
Because
there's been a lot of scary things.
Yeah, there's been a lot of scary things. I mean, the scariest moment of my life was when I was in Honduras, staying at these people's house. They're nice people. They seem like nice people. My horse had gotten hurt. I was in Tegucigalpa, which is the most dangerous city in the Americas, the most amount of deaths per capita, and I had very strict rules. I couldn't take, you know, any cab. I had to take only the one cab driver to where the horses were, back to this like bed and breakfast type thing where I was staying, just a family's house, just because it was so dangerous. And one night, I was talking to my family over Skype when all of a sudden I hear 3 gunshots outside and a woman pleading for her life. And when I go to the window, the owner of the house was trying to kill his wife.
Oh my goodness.
And I was the only person staying there. So it was a terrible moment. Like, I'd heard a gun being fired before, you know, I'd fired a gun, but when you hear combusting gunpowder and then a woman pleading for her life, it was just a terrible moment. And I didn't know if he was going to come kill me at this point, because I didn't know if he had killed her and I was the only witness. Luckily, he didn't kill her. He wounded her very badly. He was extremely drunk and he didn't kill me, as you're able to tell, because I'm telling the story. a lot of scary moments. I had to stay in the home of a drug lord in Honduras as well, 3 days. He had a petting zoo in his house. Everyone with AK-47s, children as young as 9 years old with pistols on their belts.
Oh, my goodness.
His eyes were like matte black. It harbored a lot of evil.
Sure.
But at the same time, around his family, he was a very loving man. So it was very interesting as a journalist, you know, to see, this man and how complex he was, because he was so evil, but yet so loving with his family. I met a grizzly bear in Montana. The horses saved my life. They smelled him much before I saw him.
Mm-hmm.
But the best part about the trip is the solidarity of the people you meet. And one story that I'll never forget, so long as I live, as a family in Guatemala who had one chicken that they were saving for Christmas and lived in a shack, and they butchered that chicken the night I was there to feed me.
Oh,
so
my goodness.
That's something I encountered every country, every village, every town I got to. It's just
generosity.
Generosity in the Americas. 99.9% of people are good. So don't lose faith in humanity when you put yourself out there. You see that, you know, there's so many angels around you, and sometimes people that have nothing give you everything.
Sure. Yeah, well, gosh, that's a beautiful thought, and so true. I think that when you do put yourself out there, it's always amazing how people respond. So scary stuff, exciting stuff. What's your favorite thing to eat on the road? What can you not live without?
Oh, what I can't live without? Trail mix. I'm addicted to trail mix. I'm like a bird. Yeah, trail mix. Beef jerky is great.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of protein, easy to carry, don't need a fridge. Ramen noodle saves your life. 2 seconds to warm up.
Yeah.
You know, you just get that water boiling, shut off your gas to save it because you don't have a lot.
Right.
And then just keep the lid closed. And in like 3 minutes, it's good to go. And it's nice to have something warm at night, but you're so tired. Granola bars. Most nights, I would just eat a granola bar. I couldn't even chew it. I would just like try to slide it down my throat. I was so tired. Because by the time you ride the 30 kilometers, 8 to 10 hours, then you can't just put your bike down. It's a horse. You got to feed it.
Right.
You got to find a place for it to sleep. It gets its leg caught in the fence, you know. And then when you're done feeding and taking care of these animals, you got to put up your tent.
Right.
And then you got to sleep because you're so tired. So, yeah, granola bars or bananas. Love bananas. Peanut butter and bread. Yeah, that kind of thing. And then when you get to a town, you get a 2-4 beer and a nice steak and you just salivate over it.
Yeah, I bet.
Like, thank God for beer.
Yeah. So water is critically important. Are you always packing water, or are you always packing water filtration, or what's your secret with water?
My secret with water is that I've learned that water is life.
Yeah, especially for the horses. I mean,
100%. Horses drink a lot of water. So it's impossible to carry the amount of water one horse would drink, never mind 3 or 2 on this long ride. It's impossible. You can't carry it. Way too heavy. So you depend on creeks and rivers and people. And what I discovered on my journey is that I don't know what's causing global warming, but it's real.
Sure.
Very real. And every country I crossed was the worst drought in the last generation, hottest year in the past 100 years. And every farmer I talked to and every rancher didn't understand when the rain was coming anymore or when it was going. I faced a lot of problems in the U.S., especially crossing Yellowstone. There was a day where there were supposed to be creeks up the mountain we were riding. When we got there, Specimen Ridge, they were all dry.
They were dry.
And we had to ride till 1 a.m. The next day just to find a river to get to the Lamar River and give our horses a drink, because we were very scared they were going to colic and die because they had, you know, climbing up this gigantic mountain pass really hard. And then that just continued on. Some nights my horses would sleep without water. But luckily, like I said, strategic planning. I spoke to long riders around the globe, and I met a woman named Bernice Sandy who's traveled thousands of miles on horseback. She's American. And when I met her, she told me, you're going to face droughts. You're not going to have water. So carry a liter of cooking oil. And when you don't have water for more than 24 hours, you get a big syringe and you throw that oil down your horse's throat.
Okay.
And that's going to help, you know, keep them from colicking, because their intestines are very long and it keeps it nice and wet. And it saved my life because I did use that trick. But yes, water was very tough. And at the same time that I saw this, the effects we're having or whatever is happening with the world and these droughts, I get to Central America and there was places where I couldn't give my horses water because the rivers were so polluted. There were places where I had to tie a bandana around my face, saw myself from gagging because of the terrible smell and the air from these that were permeating from these waters. So it's just so sad. You know, it's so sad to see the way that, some humans treat the planet like a big trash can. And that's a cool thing about being a farmer, rancher, cowboy, is that you're never going to throw garbage in the water your animals need to drink.
Right.
You're never going to overgraze the fields your animals need to eat.
Yeah.
And you're connected to the earth. You know, you have roots and you understand what kind of footprint you have.
Absolutely.
And I find that that's our biggest problem today, is that children and people in general in big cities don't have that footprint because they're not feeling the earth.
Yeah.
They have no contact whatsoever with it. So it's so much easier to do these things, to throw garbage in the rivers, to throw garbage out the window when you don't know the effect it's having. So,
that disconnection is powerful in the wrong way.
Yeah,
for sure. You mentioned footprint, and I immediately thought of those horses' hooves and the shoes that they must be wearing. Are you a skilled farrier yourself, or do you rely on people along the way? Or
I'm not a skilled anything.
Okay,
but I am a farrier.
You know enough.
I cowboy shoe, and these horses need to be shod all the time. Or a lot of people are using boots, boots these days, but. Mm-hmm. I'm like an old timer. I have an old soul, so I like shoes. And so I'll carry a couple shoes with me, you know, or you hear it. When you hear the clanging, you stop and you nail it back on so you don't have to do anything harder. And then when I get to a town and there's a good farrier, I used to apprentice with a really good farrier out of Canada when I was younger. And he was my roping coach as well, Jason Thompson. And he really ingrained in me how important it is to have your horse's feet balanced, because it's just like us. You have a boot that doesn't fit you well and you walk all day with it, guess what? It's going to leave a blister.
Yeah.
And imagine these horses walking for 16,000 kilometers. It's extremely important that we balance their hooves and that their feet are very healthy. So when I find a good farrier, he helps me out and we get their feet tip-top shape.
Very good. Yeah. Critically important. I mean, because a stone bruise or anything could ruin your trip. Yeah.
And your horse's health is everything. With all my horses, I don't ride 1 kilometer. And fun fact, I use more than 300 horseshoes on the first journey. So I am the luckiest man in the world today.
Yeah. Very good. They're all pointed up, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, Felipe, it's been such a pleasure to get just a little taste of your story this morning on Ag Matters Radio. I really appreciate you taking the time. I'm so glad we connected on social media. I can't wait to watch your journey. And I encourage folks to check out your website and your social media, track the trip, throw some support your way, read your book. I know I'll be reading your book. And just thanks so much for what you're doing and for telling another great positive agriculture story.
No, thank you so much. I'd like to take the opportunity to thank Alice and Pete, who have been helping me here in Palmer, yourself. Thank you so much for your help. Amazing people. I've been here for 3 days, I think. And like, I've made friends for life, I feel like.
For sure.
And today, seeing what you guys did, ride a tractor to work day.
Yeah.
Just got to take my hat off to you folks, because that's so amazing, so important. And just seeing the sense of community in that building, everyone eating breakfast together and chatting and sharing stories was really special for me. And you can be sure that I'm going to take that with me for a long time. So thank you for that opportunity.
Very good. Thank you so much.
You've been listening to Ag Matters, covering positive agriculture stories from across Alaska with your host, Amy Pettit, of the Alaska Farmland Trust. Ag Matters is a production of Radio Free Palmer, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. For more information about this program, email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.